Hi, I'm David Kaplan, and you're listening to the Sports Talk Live podcast. Enjoy the show.
The Astros won their first ever World Series. They get it done, beating the Dodgers in L.A. Here's how it ended. But David, they jumped them quick, got the lead early, and then they handed the ball to Charlie Morton, who the Pirates didn't want back. All of a sudden, he's throwing 98, and he was awesome.
What a weird game. What a great series. The Game 7 wasn't as dramatic as you would maybe want it to be, but neither starting pitcher lasted very long. But that was typical of the entire series. You feel good for the city of Houston. This is a team that homegrown, they signed international guys, they drafted players, they developed them, they went through the tough times, and they made the trade that mattered there, and they got Verlander. Good for baseball when something like that happens.
It's a great lineup, and this time last year, they were worried where they're going to get their pitching. Dallas Keuchel bounced back in a big way. Lance McCullers, after some ups and downs, bounced back. And Charlie Morton, a signing that probably nobody liked when they made it, proved to be a really, really smart signing. So it kind of goes to show how much you can improve a rotation in a short amount of time. Then obviously the Verlander trade at the deadline was the final piece.
Hindsight is 20/20. Kershaw, four good innings last night. Should he have started that game?
No. I mean, if he starts that game, don't bother trading for you, Darvish. Just load up and try to run behind a handful of pitchers. I mean, you, Darvish, had a bad start against the Astros. But actually, he had a pretty good record when he was with the Rangers pitching against the Astros. And we saw in the championship series against the Cubs how dominant he can be when he's on. So it was you, Darvish's day. Darvish has to go.
You know, in many respects, this is a clone of the Cubs season last year, the way they tore it down, they built it up. They were the best team in baseball, really, from day one. They struggled a little more in the second half than the Cubs did last year. And then, you know, you look at this pitching thing with the Dodgers. Everybody is panicked and always me, break up the Cubs. They don't match up with the Dodgers. The NLCS was terrible. And yet here comes Houston, clearly not with the pitching the Dodgers have, and they win the series. So, you know, to me, and I'm always going to bring it back to the Cubs, things are not as dire on the north side as everybody wants to make them out to be. You now got the two most recent champions are two of the most talented young teams in baseball.
By the way, they did it without a really elite bullpen.
They really didn't. I mean, Giles wasn't on during the World Series.
He wasn't on in the postseason.
Yeah, he didn't have a good postseason, which is the anomaly. I mean, you thought the Dodgers, that's the way you win in the postseason now, is with the way the Indians did last year. Really, the way the Cubs did. But, I would not say the Astros, the strength was their bullpen, which is scary because now if they go out and they improve their bullpen, they're going to be even better. Right. And I think the Darvish decision is something that people will talk about. But it's one of those things that, like Joe Maddon says, because it didn't work out doesn't make it a bad decision. Had they not started Darvish, that's why they got him. I mean, sometimes you just, the guy's not going to have it. I mean, you traded for Yu Darvish for a moment like last night. He just didn't meet the moment.
David, they also scored one run last night. So It's not really about their pitching decisions. It's about the great job Houston did, and about Cody Bellinger's, ball-proof bat that he's been swinging with all the strikeouts. I mean, this guy, long stretches, looked like a great hitter, but it hadn't been in the last few weeks.
Well, not just Bellinger, but look at what happened to Justin Turner all of a sudden. I mean, you can't shut him off through the first two series, and then he disappears in the World Series. It's baseball. Guys get into hitting streaks, guys get cold, guys pitch well, and none of that is foolproof when you try and build the perfect team.
To Hub's point about the Cubs, it amazes me that Anthony Rizzo has been on a 100-loss team and a 100-win team with the same organization. But you look at these Astros, 300-loss seasons.
Yeah.
Three!
But not
just
on
one
team.
But Altuve was
Altuve,
on for three 100-loss seasons. I mean, that's patience.
Okay, the Dodgers had the highest payroll, 287. The Dodgers won 104. Tommy Lasorda said to Dave Roberts 2 days ago, you haven't done blank if you don't win tomorrow. They didn't win tomorrow. They don't have a world championship. So how do you characterize their season? Because to Derek Jeter, his public comments were about himself. If we didn't win the World Series, don't tell me we got there, we failed.
No,
what do you say?
It is hugely disappointing. Not as disappointing as if they had failed once again to get to the World Series. They lost the championship series four times with Clayton Kershaw before they won it this year. So getting to the World Series counts for something. But it's hugely disappointing. And I think it's probably not good news for the Cubs. You know, I think had the Dodgers won, you would have seen the Dodgers be a little bit more passive this offseason. And I think you might have seen the Cubs step it up a little bit because, you know, it's hammered into you what the competition is in the National League.
Also, what do you think? Darvish, did he lose himself some money last night? And now is Arrieta the primary pitcher available in free agency? And that doesn't help the Cubs if they're trying to negotiate with that guy, keeping him in town.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's almost a neutral question. I mean, neither Arrieta nor Darvish were dominant in the postseason. But Darvish had the Dodgers been eliminated before the World Series, and he'd been able to go off his work early in the postseason, he would have been clearly the number one guy. And I do think he lost in those two starts. He lost a lot of leverage, and Arrieta probably finds some of it.
What are the 2018 Cubs need to do this offseason to get back? 1 year ago, here's what happened, and now Houston is the defending world champs. This was 1 year ago today. Hard to believe it's been 12 months, but Theo's bender is over, and the Cubs have to rebuild parts of their team.
Well,
what do they got to do?
I don't know that they need – well, they need to rebuild the pitching staff, obviously, if they're going to lose. Obviously, Lackey's gone, and we assume Arrieta's gone, and so that's a big lift right there. But beyond that, guys, I look at this, and I go to even that last game, that loss to the Dodgers. Javi Baez, certainly Wilson Contreras, Ian Happ wasn't even there. You got a lot of guys who were much better players this year than they were last year. And so this is not a team with huge holes. I don't even really understand this sudden urgency to get rid of Jason Hayward. My focus would be much more on the pitching staff. And the bullpen, that was misleading all year long because they were amongst the top bullpens in baseball in ERA, you know, late in the season. But there was never a feeling this year, for me anyway, that I was safe in a game. And I felt much more that way the year before when Aroldis Chapman was there.
Well, Wade Davis was a lockdown closer for throughout the season. And you
MVP.
Felt good.
He could be. You can make the argument he's their MVP this year.
You felt great when they got to him.
And if you lose
and
him,
he's
what happens?
He's a free agent just like Arrieta. To me, you'd probably rank him Arrieta. Figure if he's a number one or number two starter. And then probably Wade Davis the second. And then the last spot in the rotation, or you know, the Lackey spot, I don't think is that big of a deal. But, you know, you've got to go out and make two impact additions for sure.
And if you can't sign those people, then you're going to have to make trades for those people. And that's where you get into your position players. Who are you willing to dangle? Because you've got to replace 60 starts in your rotation. That's 40% of your pitching. Then you don't know what's going on with Wade Davis. I don't trust Justin Wilson. Do you? Carl Edwards Jr., do you, as a closer?
Not as a closer.
Okay, no. You need a closer. And, you know, Hayward, I don't know that you're going to be able to move that contract, but I applaud them for trying if they do because, you know, he makes way too much money to be that much of an offensive liability.
Yeah, you lengthen your lineup if you can move him out.
Absolutely.
But you weaken your defense.
You do.
And depending on what other players you have, but depending on what other players you have to trade, you may weaken it more. I mean, listen, I understand that there's some concern with Addison Russell, the immaturity, some of the things that happened this season, but you have potentially one of the best double play combinations in baseball for the next decade. And to break that up, you know, now you got to rebuild there. So I just think I'd be really selective. You know, we sat here 1 year ago. Not 1 year ago today, 1 year ago, 3 days from now. And I'm sitting here saying, you got to trade Schwarber. And I'm not pretending for a minute I knew what was going to happen. I had no idea this year was going to be this year. But to me, that was the movable piece. He is now still the movable piece, but he's not worth nearly what he was. So if there was one mistake, to me, that was the mistake. It was being too loyal there.
You know, go back a couple years, and I would have said, how long will the Cubs be able to have Javier Baez and Addison Russell, two premier shortstops on the same team? How long will Javier Baez be happy being a second baseman? I kind of wonder if that dynamic is a little bit at work as start to get to the arbitration years, heading toward free agency. You know, shortstop is the bigger spot. It's where guys want to play.
Also, they're going to get you more in return. If you're going after a guy that can be a top of the rotation starter in a trade, a Chris Archer, somebody like that, that may be, you know, a fantasy scenario. But if that is your goal,
it is not a fantasy scenario.
Because if it's Chris Archer, it's going to cost you somebody like Baez or Russell.
Okay, could you get Chris Archer for Schwarber and Happ? And would you do that if you could?
I would get Chris Archer for sure.
I don't know that those two would be.
I think you move one of the middle infielders. You know, Ian Happ's not going to have a whole lot of value unless it's going to Pittsburgh, where he's from. you know, to me, it's the Baez-Russell question. And I think what Theo said at the end of the season this year compared to a year ago, if you remember a year ago, it was like none of these pieces that won us a championship are available.
We're protecting our core young players. He didn't say that this
year. Was the way he put it. Now, this year it was like, no, sometimes you got to use your depth to get other pieces. And, you know, Addison Russell, if you traded him now, you'd be trading him when his value's down. Same thing with Kyle Schwarber. You know, yes, Schwarber hit the 30 home runs and had a solid second half. But across the board, people are asking questions. So, the guy you have that would probably have the value would be Javier Baez.
I think, Phil, don't you think Addison Russell has done it for a year? I mean, 2016 was as good of a year for a shortstop, offensively, defensively. And then he had a little bit of setback for some reasons that may be hard to explain. I still think he would have trade value.
He would have value, but I don't think he would have it. He doesn't have star value, star element like Baez does right now. And I think the off the field stuff is an issue, and other teams are going to be asking, and it's going to look bad. Why are the Cubs looking to move Addison Russell? I mean, it just kind of looks like, oh, they, you know, what do they know?
Right.
So I think that hurts his value.
But think about where we started again, guys, because this is what makes it so tricky. You don't have to give up any of those guys to get a Lance McCullers, a Charlie Morton, a Brandon Morrow. Look how that worked out in Los Angeles. And this is something we know that Theo and Jed have liked to do before. Find the guys who are ready to break out. I think they've specialized in that, and they've done it well. Now, granted, it may not be as exciting at the start of the season because you look at what you got and you say, what are they doing? But that is what just worked, you know, and so I think they got to look at it both ways. I can live with losing almost anybody but Baez, and I understand why you're saying that, Phil. But to me, of all of the kids, the one who's still the furthest from his ceiling, to me, appears to be Baez.
They also have second baseman too, Hub. Mm-hmm. You know, Ian Happ didn't have a bad postseason. He was disappeared.
He didn't get any playing time. Didn't give him a chance to have a good or a bad postseason.
You know, it was buried.
It was forgotten. It was
Ben Zobrist offsets him. They're the same kind of guy, the same
Gold
piece.
Gold Glove dominated Ben Zobrist.
I thought it'd be great. And his defensive runs save metrics are right there with Javier Baez. We overlook a lot of mistakes Javier Baez makes.
Still
forces the ball and will have the, you know, the excitable moment.
Phil, come on, but to your
Zobrist
is a Gold Glove infielder.
He has the same defensive run save number that Javier Baez has. And I think that is a comment on both of them played. But, no, I mean, I'm as surprised as anything.
I have two sources that told me that Javier Baez is a better player defensively than Ben Zobrist, my left eye and my right eye. I just look at him and go,
I do think Zobrist gets ragged on, knocked on by so many Cub fans because he's on this field full of 24-year-old athletes who are fluid and you know, move like ballerinas, and he doesn't do that. So he looks bad, but I think he makes the plays, and I do support that the numbers say he's a pretty darn good fielder.
All right, let's move over to the other side of our town because the Chicago White Sox are on a rebuild. They have followed the Houston model, the Cubs model, even more the Houston model, and they've got all these kids coming. Are the White Sox on the right track? Are we looking at a really bad 2018 season, another high pick, or can they actually start to turn the corner more quickly than that?
Well, I think, yes, they could turn the corner quicker than that, but then they wouldn't really be on the Houston model because the Houston model was a lot of drafts in a row where they were picking right at the top, first one, two, or three picks. This year, the White Sox won too many, and they had the fifth pick, I believe. That wouldn't be great by Houston standards. That's not where you get Carlos Correa and Alex Bregman.
They have not bottomed out yet.
You know, when the Astros were bad, they didn't have a Jose Abreu. They didn't have an Avisaíl Garcia stepping forward in mid-career and having a really good run. They had nothing but kids all over the place. And so the White Sox to the Astros, to me, there's a difference.
The difference is, too, that when the Sox decided to go down this path, unlike the Astros, they had major league talent they could flip for prospects. So they didn't have to draft as many guys. They used their commodities to bring them in return to the Yankees, to all the trades that they made. They got those guys from the Red Sox. and they developed him within their system. So those aren't necessarily homegrown guys, but they're guys who are going to develop in their minor league system. You know, so that's a little bit of a difference. I think the Sox have not quite bottomed out yet, but I still think expecting they were just good enough last year to be exciting to tempt you to think something is possible next year, but I don't think it's safe to – you shouldn't assume that.
I don't know the answer to this. I'm asking the question. We know that he's obviously a pretty good trader, but what do we know about Rick Hahn's ability to use these high picks and get the right guy? I've been buried all day. I don't know if somebody's written this yet, but somebody will if they didn't today. The reality is, if the Houston Astros had taken Chris Bryant instead of Mark Appel, we'd be waiting on 110 years, and the Astros might have gotten there a year or two earlier.
Well, they made two mistakes in the draft, 2 years in a row. They missed on Bryant, and then they drafted
Brady
Aiken,
and
they couldn't sign him.
So, correct.
But what happens is
medical issue.
You get enough talent.
And in Aiken's case, it just delayed it a year. They got that pick
right.
Back
they got it back, and it turned into Bregman.
Right.
But what happens is you surround yourself with enough talent to allow yourself – you can make a mistake. They also cut J.D. Martinez. So, I mean, that was you know.
Theo always says, if you bet 60%, you're doing great.
You're not going to get everything right at the GM. You're going to, you know, you're right. So, but you're going to have to really hit on some picks when you have them, like Correa and the other ones, and that's what they did.
You got to say the White Sox are off to a running start in the first year return from those guys, going back to the Adam Eaton and Chris Sale trades and the guys that they brought in there. Michael Kopech. I mean, you know,
Quintana.
His star rose, and Quintana to get Eloy Jimenez. You know, talk about the Jason Hayward. Can they get rid of Jason Hayward? There's a lot more urgency to do that if you have Eloy Jimenez sitting there, you know, maybe 50 games at AAA away from jumping into the lineup and maybe being, you know, a big impact guy.
Yes. All right, let's move on to football. Bears are 3-5 at the bye, 3 games behind the Vikings. But John Fox is still thinking division title? Is he serious?
For Chicago's Sports Talk with Sizzle, crank up the heat and turn on STL. On NBC Sports Chicago, host David Kaplan brings his no-nonsense opinion to the table in a half hour on the topics that are trending with our teams.
We got the most mismanaged basketball team in the history of the world. Which franchise made the gutsiest draft day move?
I think Pack wanted to do this and he finally got his way.
Sports Talk Live, presented by the Chevy Silverado. Weeknights at 6 on NBC Sports Chicago.
Bears and the NFL community have rallied around Zach Miller since his awful injury on Sunday. Yesterday, Saints tight ends dropped by the hospital he's in New Orleans to visit with him, spending 15 or 20 minutes with him. Also, Mark Ingram said, hey, I'll love to bring you dinner. You pick where you want it from. I'm feeding you while you're down here. Which I think it's cool to see guys step up. Yeah. And just be there for
Mark Ingram doesn't drop
brother in battle.
And we got a lot of guys there, but for the grace of God, you know.
Yeah.
And I think players really feel that when they see something like this.
How much longer is he expected to not be able to travel and to stay in the hospital in New Orleans?
You know, I had heard that it's a minimum 2 or 3 weeks. It's vascular. It's not about a knee injury. And so I'm not a doctor, but that's the
yeah, John said not for the foreseeable future would he be back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's down there for a while.
Yeah.
So unbelievable. All right, how can they fix replay in the National Football League? Because that Al Riveron piece was embarrassingly bad.
Well, they're covering themselves. I mean, they're trying to it was absurd.
It was absurd.
It was
first
absurd
of all,
that they were trying to make everyone
let him know that the sweater really wasn't a good look.
Bad look, wasn't it?
Bad look.
Yeah. Okay, needs a consultant. But beyond that, his eyes need checked. Nobody buys the fact that ball was anything but a reception.
Here's the problem. We were talking about this with Deshaun Watson. This is bad for football.
Yeah.
You know, you've got a rule that makes no sense. At least tell the officials, use your common sense. Stop this process of the catch crap. Use your common sense. It was clearly a catch. But the thing that really bothered me about Riveron the most, his two immediate predecessors, Dean Blandino and Mike Pereira, had both been all over network television saying, this is the rule, and that was a catch.
And Blandino went another level and said, had I been in the booth making that call, and they called it incomplete, I'd have reversed it and said it's a touchdown.
I mean, that's embarrassing.
It's absolutely a catch. And with everything else the league has got going wrong PR-wise, letting that guy go out there and embarrass himself was just stupid.
Yeah, I don't know how you fix it, Cap, unless you have, you know, unless you really dramatically alter the language of the rule or just leave it up to a judgment call, which there's so many other things are, but there's no Nobody can define what a catch is in the NFL.
It's easy to fix it. You remove the process of the catch piece of it. You say the player must catch the ball and control it going to the ground. End. Forget the process of the catch, because that's pretty easy. And then, like every other call the officials make, is judgment whether he did that or not. Instead of, or what they've tried to do is they've tried to make it subjective instead of objective, and they've made it more objective.
It's ridiculous. If Zach Miller were a running back and he was diving over the pile like
Turco, touchdown,
and he broke the plane with possession, it'd be a touchdown. But because he's a receiver and he has to roll and hold on to everything until the process is
completed, make a football move.
It's ridiculous.
Stupid. Like, I think back to the Calvin Johnson catch, I think in 2010.
Mm-hmm. Zach Coleman
was the head coach here.
That's what started this, because the rule had been in place for 3 or 4 years, and nobody had used it until that point.
And then I think of the Dez Bryant catch down the left sideline at Green Bay.
All right, now here's the thing. I was literally
seven feet
away.
Yeah.
I was doing the sidelines. I was in there. That was not a catch. And the reason is, he lost the ball as soon as he went to the ground. That was not about completing the process of the catch. He caught the ball. He took a step or two, but then as he went down, the ball came loose. And so, let me rephrase that. I don't know if it was a catch or not, but I understood it was a rational explanation according to the rule, because he did not He did not complete the catch to the ground.
This is ridiculous.
As opposed to Johnson and Miller had the ball on the ground.
When I watched the Dez Bryant one, I'm still convinced my eyes tell me it's a catch.
Mike Pereira had the best answer as to how you fix this. Mike Pereira said, you get 50 guys in a bar, and whatever the majority says, that's what should be a catch. He's right. You know,
depends what bar.
This isn't that hard to figure out. You know what's a catch and what's not a catch.
All right, Bears are 3-5 right now at the bye, 3 games behind the division-leading Vikings. John Fox is keeping his eye on the prize.
To start the season, and to start every season that I've been here, is to win our division. One thing about when you do that, you're guaranteed a spot in the tournament. So that's still the goal. Right now, we're kind of a one game at a time, one brick at a time type of mentality. So as these guys go away and refresh and regroup, a little bit like a halftime break, they'll start thinking about the Green Bay Packers.
He doesn't possibly really think.
You're not going to rip him for that, Cap.
No, what's he supposed to say?
I'm not ripping him. Okay. But deep down, I don't think anybody thinks this team's catching the Minnesota.
I don't know that he can say that. I mean, look, we kill him for being evasive and dismissive and condescending at the podium. When the guy wants to get people to believe in the fact that they have a shot at the playoffs because they're playing better than
applaud it.
I'm going to give you a different way to look at this, Dave, because I actually just wrote this yesterday. Assuming no more devastating injuries, which you have to be able to make that assumption to predict a record. I'm not saying it's not going to happen. I think they're going to finish 8-8. That's obviously not going to do anything, and that's going to be stunningly good.
You think they're going to finish 8-8?
Based on the
5-3.
Well, here's where I'm going with this. Yes, and here's why. Based on what Fox just said,
Take
a look at the schedule. Where we sit right now, there's a good chance that the Bears are only going to be an underdog once second half of the season. The only game that they will not be a favorite in right now is the Eagles. Now, this could change as things go on. So if they just win the games they should and go 7-1, that's 10-6. He can make the statement. I don't think it's going to happen, but I see why he says it.
The other thing, too, I mean, if Aaron Rodgers' absence makes Green Bay not be Green Bay.
Beatable.
Then you're only one Viking bad month away from it being a wide open division.
How are they 6-2?
They are the Vikings. They have bad months. To me, the fact you're only chasing one really strong team, one team with a good record that could maybe isn't that strong of a team.
6-2 with a win over the Bears.
But think about what David just said. Defense. And the Bears could have won that game on the last possession. They were that close. I don't think people are fully grasping yet how well this defense is playing. And the defense can get better. Could get worse, but I mean, that's what they're hoping as they start to approach the second half. That's what they're focused on.
The secondary has been so much improved, hasn't it? I mean, I think beyond the level probably anybody would have hoped.
They professionalized the corner position, and they got a good draft in Eddie Jackson.
Most surprising thing that you've seen from the Chicago Bears this year.
Player? Kyle Fuller's at the top 100% of the list, I think, 100%. Because you thought that this was a guy a year ago having everything questioned about his commitment to being an NFL player. Now he's a guy that you're considering keeping.
We call that contract year.
Yes.
When the game ends, switch back to CSN Chicago for Bears postgame live. The team will take you through all the key moments from the field, hear from Coach Fox, and get live player reactions. Bears postgame live after every Bears game on CSN Chicago.
Lowry, you know, for him to step up and play the way he is right now, you know, is such a great sign for who, you know, for the player that he is already and the player that he can become, you know, as he continues to mature and grow into his body and figure out everything that this league's all about. So, you know, the kid has no fear whatsoever. He's moving his feet really well defensively. He's growing every game. He's a student of it. He wants to watch film, and he's a humble kid. So he's got all the qualities to be a superstar in this league.
Where Lauri Markkanen will end up. The beginning is pretty good written all over it. Check out Stat of the Day, driven by the Chevy Silverado. Five players in Bulls franchise history have had 10 or more points in each of their first six career games. The five, Mitchell Wiggins, Michael Jordan, Tony Kukoc, Derrick Rose, and Lauri Markkanen. So I ask you, is he a future superstar? Because I will remind everyone, Kevin O'Neill, the former NBA college coach, my guy, came on this show and came on radio and said this is March and April. He is the best player in the draft. He'd take him number one.
You can see why I'd say that, Cap. And I know that Fred Hoiberg does not have a lot of basketball credibility in this town. And I know he's not a guy who overstates things. He's a master of the understatement. But what he said is not outrageous. This guy, when you watch him play, it's only been six games. So you want to slow down a little bit. But you see why he would say that. He can shoot it. He can create his own shot. He was good in the paint last night. Defensively, he's going to be limited. He's got the right attitude, the right approach. You have to love what you see. Who cares why he's playing so much now? Who cares why, you know, what happened, the circumstances that created the opportunity?
Thank goodness the punch was thrown.
It was good for everybody because this kid has got it.
Yeah, I think the one thing you have to say, he just doesn't look like a rookie. He looks like a 10-year-old, but he doesn't look like a rookie.
Doesn't play like a rookie.
This kid looks like he's been in the league, like he's not afraid of anything, and you know, he makes up his mind. I mean, when he gets the ball, he knows what he's going to do. He's not hesitating out there. He's pretty impressive so far.
Yeah, I remember talking with Kevin last spring. I said, who do you like in the draft? Because he does the Pac-12.
He's partial to Arizona guys, isn't he, Cap? Come on.
No, he is not. I mean,
how about Pac-12 guys?
He likes Pac-12 guys. He does. He's a Pac-12 announcer. But he said, look, Markelle Fultz doesn't work hard enough. Okay. Lonzo Ball doesn't have a mid-range game. He said he's a phenomenal passer. He goes, I'm telling you, if I'm picking number one overall, I'm taking Markelle.
Hey, one of the best things about this kid so far is the way he's rebounding. I mean, you knew he was going to come out and shoot. I didn't think he was going to have double-digit rebounds. I mean,
he can jump.
He's pretty impressive.
He actually jumps.
Working on defense. You know, I think to get off to a start, it has to be really difficult. I mean, you come into this league with no experience, you know, eyes wide-eyed, not knowing exactly what you're going to get into. I don't think it's an easy league.
Well, you know, it's not like he's also surrounded by guys who are commanding a lot of attention.
I don't believe he is the 1-1 piece on a championship where you build your team around him, but I think he's one of your top three.
Kep, I mean, I don't know that you can say that on this Bulls team. What's your definition of superstar? I mean, different interpretation, but what Fred Hoiberg, I think, is saying is that he is that guy for this franchise. They can build around him.
Right, but I'm saying when they get to the level where they feel like they can contend and win it all.
You need two of him, or maybe three of him.
You need three of him. And I think he's like your second or third best. You need the Durant, the LeBron, the guy. Well, I don't know if he's that guy.
We thought they had none of them because Jimmy Butler was the closest to one of them they had.
Right. But, okay, let me ask you a question. If I told you you could trade Markkanen, Zach LaVine, and Chris Dunn and get Jimmy back, knowing what you know now, would you do it?
No.
No shot.
No shot.
But Dave, here's the question I got to ask you because I'm kind of on Dave's side on this one. What are you limiting his ceiling to? I mean, I don't think we know what his ceiling is.
Oh, I think he can be an all-star player. I'm just talking about.
Did you see Porzingis the other night against the Cavaliers?
Yep.
Have you seen the way he's played lately? That's what you can foresee out of
Markkanen. No doubt.
They're very similar players.
No doubt. I just need. To build a championship, I believe you've got to have a ball-dominant guy that handles and takes over a game, like LeBron does, like certain guys, like Kobe did, like Michael did, those kind of guys.
Can that
guys.
Be Zach LaVine?
I don't know.
You know what's really nice, though, to hear is that six games into this kid's career, the coach is not afraid to put that kind of pressure on him because he doesn't view it as pressure. It's just a matter-of-fact statement.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Sports Talk Live podcast. Remember to watch the show weekdays on CSN and visit csnchicago.com for previous episodes of the podcast and all the latest sports news and highlights.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.